This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're halfway through the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Josh Smith. Josh is with ScoutingTheRefs.com. Talk a little bit about the officiating and the off-ice discipline side of this game we know and love. Josh, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Josh. Last night here in Winnipeg, Francois St. Laurent was the one of the officials on the ice, and Jets fans and Paul Maurice have a history with Mr. St. Laurent, as he is the official who booted Paul Maurice back out of a game in February 2016 against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yep.
Brian Little took a hit. There was no call on the play. Maurice was upset. He said a couple of choice words, and he got the boot from that. And you don't often see a head coach in the NHL getting kicked out of a game. How much of a history do you think ever plays in between a head coach and an official, especially when it's been, you know, a couple of years since that incident took place?
You know, I think from an officiating standpoint, these guys are moving around the league and they're going, you know, game by game, different crew, different teams. I think you move on from that as an official, and you know, whether you're trying to find fault at why that happened or whether, you know, the guy was arguing a little strongly that night, but I think as an official, you try to move on from that. From a head coach's standpoint, I would say I think it's a little bit harder because you start feeling like, well, you know, maybe if a different guy makes that call, it's a marginal call, but you remember what happened with this official, so you start to think that maybe he's got it in for you. Definitely a challenge, though. One of those things that you don't want to let get in the way as an official or as a coach, you know, when that past experience colors your current decisions. But it's definitely a tough thing, and that's part of the human side of the game. You know, you're never going to get away from it.
Josh, I know you're going to want to talk about this. I know this is a Scouting the Refs favorite player, Brad Marchand. Last weekend in that game against the Nashville Predators, Brad Marchand, he racked up a few penalty minutes, 14 penalty minutes actually in total. He got the original high-sticking penalty, and then he got the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, and then he got a misconduct penalty. What did you think of Brad Marchand pretending to embellish that high-sticking call, and how did you think the referees in that game, it was Marc Jeannette and it was Dean Morton, those were the two officials. How do you think they handled that whole situation?
You know, you never want a guy showing you up. Marchand's a character. He's got a strong personality. Everybody knows it. He's also got a track record of embellishing some calls himself. But I agree with the Boston coach that, you know, it should have been enough with the misconduct. Maybe they didn't need to go for the 10-minute initially, but you saw, you know, the drama, the theatrics that Marchand was doing out there. I mean, it's not just arguing a call. It's not just saying, hey, ref, I didn't hit him, and complaining. He really brought it upon himself with the level that he took that display to. And, you know, I think the officials are trying to send a message that we're not going to tolerate this from Marchand. And frankly, I don't think they tolerate it from anybody else either. It's one thing to have a bad call. It's one thing to argue that, you know, maybe your stick didn't hit him, and where the official was positioned, he didn't have the best take on it. I'm sure Sissons is going to get fined for the embellishment on the initial call, but that's something we look at after the fact, not during the game. But yeah, I think ultimately it was a tough pill to swallow, but I think it was the right call just because of the level that Marchand took it to.
You know, Josh, this past Wednesday, Penguins forward Evgeny Malkin received a 5-minute major for a hit to the head on Capitals forward TJ Oshie. Malkin received no supplemental discipline for that. How hard is it for the referees to make a call like this when they are happening at top speed and it appears that Malkin was possibly bracing for a hit, which Oshie confirmed after the game, perhaps feeling good because he did get the game winner?
Yeah, you know, that's especially in real time, that's a tough one. You look at the hit, you see that Oshie clearly got clipped to the head. You know, his body spun around, he's down on the ice, he's injured. Looking at that play in real time, I can't argue with the call that was made. You toss Malkin for the illegal check to the head. It's like you said, from a referee standpoint there in that moment, maybe he's bracing for a hit, but with the angle you have and with Malkin's elbow coming up, it looks like it's an illegal check to the head. You know, player safety took a look at it. they felt no further discipline was required. So, you know, we move on from there. They have the benefit of replays. They have the benefit of multiple angles that the on-ice officials don't get. So, you know, we have to look at it through different lenses of the call on the ice and player safety. I know people love to complain about inconsistencies and things like that, but it's two different processes in how they're reviewing the play. And yeah, I think the officials made the right call on the ice. I think you have to call that there, especially with the hard stance the league's taking on hits to the head.
Josh Smith of ScoutingTheRefs.com is our guest on the program, talking a little bit about the officiating side of the game and some of the on-ice and off-ice disciplinary matters. Josh, earlier this year, in probably one of the most anticipated games of the season, the Jets and the Predators did battle in Nashville, and it was a terrific hockey game that saw one of the most unique circumstances, with the Jets taking, I think, a relatively unprecedented, if I recall correctly, 9 consecutive minor penalties in that game. From your perspective, as a guy who watches the game from the official's point of view, how unique is that situation? And are the officials, you know, once they get up to 3, 4, 5 consecutive penalties, beginning to look for an opportunity to call one against the Predators rather than keep it the parade to the penalty box going for the Jets?
You know, I don't think you're ever looking for that other call, but I think, you know, we talked about a human part of it. If the penalties are deserved, it's one thing, but when you start seeing it leaning heavily to one side of the sheet, it certainly creeps into the back of your head of, you know, am I missing something on the other side? Why is this so unbalanced? And there are definitely times when you know a team is taking liberties, a team's crossing the line consistently, and they're deserving every one of those penalties. Like I said, it's the human nature part of it. You don't want to let things slip and let something go on one side or call something for one team that you wouldn't have called for the other team just because of the penalty count. You know, it's important, and I mentioned moving forward before, for an official, you cut it off. Whatever the last penalty was, we're moving on from that. We set the tone on, here's what's a penalty, here's what's not a penalty, and you got to block that out of, hey, you guys took 6 penalties, but you've committed 6 infractions. And frankly, as much as it's a one-sided thing and it looks bad for one team, I prefer to see that if they're legitimate penalties, because, you know, they're deserved, and you shouldn't be letting a team get away with it just because they happen to take 4 penalties already in the period.
Josh, I wanted to ask you about last night's Capitals-Blue Jackets game, and then I know Dave wants to ask you about the incident that happened the other night with Milan Lucic and Matthew Joseph. Last night's game between the Capitals and Blue Jackets, Brad Meier left that game, as you know. Most people don't know this, but another ref doesn't come into the game. It then becomes a 3-official game. And we wanted to ask you, how does the dynamic of the game change between the remaining referee, and in this case it was Tom Chmielewski, I hope I pronounced his name right, it was Tom Chmielewski, and then the 2 linesmen. How does it change for that remaining referee when the second referee has to leave the game?
Well, it's, you know, it's definitely a shift. All these guys came up with a 3-man system, so they've all done it before. I mean, the NHL operated for years under that approach. But really, you know, where you operate, splitting things up, where you've got the trailing ref and the lead ref, and you can focus on the puck while the other guy's watching the play from behind, it goes back to an official who has to, you know, keep control of everything on the ice. And the biggest challenge, I would say, for these guys is trailing the play. So you're coming into the zone, you know, they enter the offensive zone, there's a play down low, you're watching things, you're watching the puck, as you should be. And that's where sometimes you'll see people take liberties behind the play or further, you know, up outside the blue line at center ice when you're moving up ice, is where you can get away with a whack or a, you know, a slash here and there. So those are the things that the lone official has to be more vigilant of. It's definitely a shift, especially when you're playing in a 4-man system. The rest of the time, there are standby referees in the playoffs, but during the regular season, they go at it with who they've got. And that game happened to be 1 referee and 2 linesmen. And the night prior, we saw Darren Gibbs unable to work the lines because of illness. And we had 2 referees and 1 linesman for that one. And, you know, in that case, they're sharing duties and everybody's racking up the miles.
You know, Josh, as you just touched on, I wanted to ask you about Milan Lucic, because, you know, he seemed to take that extra, you know, predatory attack on Matthew Joseph. So were you surprised that he ended up with only a fine after the game?
A little bit, just because, you know, when you watched it, or when I watched it real time, it's one thing to see him go after him and go, all right, he was going after the guy for the hit. But some of the clips really showed how predatory that shift was, from the initial slash to just stalking him up the ice. we see things that aren't hockey plays. And to me, the biggest opportunity for player safety is to find things that aren't hockey plays and get those out of the game. You know, we look at headshots, but something like this where Lucic had no interest in playing the puck. He wasn't trying to compete on the ice. He was purely out there to go after Joseph. So I'm surprised they didn't try to send a message with even a one-game suspension to say, look, we're not going to tolerate, you know, headhunting or going after players or stalking somebody on the ice. So I was a little disappointed in the fine. You know, I'm glad there was some action, but would have liked to see one game suspension just to send the message that this is not what we're doing. This is not a hockey play, and this has no business taking place on the ice.
Josh, I wanted to ask you about Wes McCauley, and he's arguably the most animated referee in today's game, and I bet you get asked about Wes McCauley a lot. And obviously, you know, scouting the ref yourself, you guys do a great job, I think, of showcasing officials' personalities. And would you like to see maybe more of that on ice from today's officials?
You know what? I wouldn't object to it. I think Wes does a great job. You know, Wes owns it. He has a good time out there. He's enjoying things. And we've seen a few other guys from time to time. Mike Lego, who's now retired, often had a couple fun moments there on the mic. But I like to see it from the guys who enjoy doing that. You know, and not all the officials have that much energy into their announcements or you know, take ownership of the, you know, the goal calls or the review calls. And if they want to, you know, I would encourage them to go with it. It was always fun. You know, in the old days, you had like a Kerry Fraser game or Van Helmond or a Paul Stewart. You knew how they were working the game. Each game had its own personality because of the officials. And that's changed a little bit in the two-man crew. And, you know, some of the guys lost their personality when you take the names off the back and just have a number back there. But, you know, it's a sport. It's a game. They're doing their job, and anything they can do to bring some more fun or entertainment to it, if these guys are comfortable doing it, I think it's great for the game. You know, the fans seem to enjoy it, and obviously Wes loves it.
They may not admit it or publicly, but what do you think the NHL head office thinks of Wes McCauley and his showmanship?
That's a good question. I would love to defer to Stephen Walcombe on that to find out, but from what I would surmise, I think, you know, Wes is a consummate professional. He's one of the league's top officials, and he certainly knows where the line is on what's appropriate and what's not. So I think I would think they'd be perfectly comfortable with Wes out there. That said, I think they prefer to not have the spotlight shining on their officials, so maybe a little hesitant about the additional attention he draws. I think they want the officials to blend into the background, do their job quietly, and Wes, thankfully for the rest of us, doesn't always do it quietly, and I appreciate that.
I think most fans appreciate it, too. Last question for you, Josh. How long do you think until we see the gender barrier broken when it comes to officiating, and we see the first either female referee or lineswoman in the game?
I've talked to some officials about that. I think there's definitely an opportunity. There have been some high-level women's officials that have worked men's hockey. I think we're going to need to see it at some of the lower levels before it works its way up to the NHL. There's definitely an opportunity. To me, you could have it at either position, but referee might be a bit easier without the physical requirements of breaking up fights. However, there are plenty of women who could handle these guys that are out there. So I think the door's open. I think the women's game and women's officiating has been improving year after year. I know some top female officials have preferred to focus on the women's game and growing their sport more than trying to transition and break into the men's game. So I think it will be a battle, but I don't think it's an insurmountable one. And you know, I certainly think we can see female officials in the NHL at some point, but they've done it in the lower levels, and hopefully we see some more of that, and they keep challenging that, because there's certainly enough skill, ability, and talent for them to do so.
Josh Smith covers the world of officiating at scoutingtherefs.com. We highly recommend you can follow him at Twitter, @scoutingtherefs. Josh, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a great day. Enjoy the games.
Thanks, Josh. You too. When we come back, we talk about some changes potentially on the verge in Pittsburgh. The Penguins are scuffling, and Jim Rutherford is getting antsy. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Well, he's definitely anxious. There's no question about that. And look, he still believes and knows that the Pittsburgh Penguins are a very deep team and should be a contending team in the second half of the season, but the chemistry is off right now in that lineup.
The chemistry is off with the Pittsburgh Penguins. The record, surprisingly poor for a team with Malkin and, of course, some guy named Sidney Crosby. 6-5-3 the Penguins are on the season, struggling as of late. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10 minutes before the top of the hour, and this segment is brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Penguins struggling, as I mentioned, coming out of the break there, Mr. Ginsburg. Five losses in a row, outscored 12-2 in their last three games. They lost on Wednesday night, the last time they played, to the Washington Capitals, that game where Evgeny Malkin got booted out for his hit on TJ Oshie, and then Oshie ends up scoring the winning goal there. The Penguins struggling. They're back in action later on tonight against the Arizona Coyotes. What is ailing the Pittsburgh Penguins so far early in this 2018-19 season?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the Penguins have been giving up a lot of goals lately, and the Penguins over the years, we know they've made the trades for the centers. Brought in Derek Brassard.
Yeah.
They brought in Riley Sheahan. For me, it's not a problem with the offense. I mean, Malkin, Crosby, Kessel, I mean, they're having a good start to the season. Jake Gensel, Crosby's linemate, you know, he's struggled a little bit offensively as of late, and they really like Dominic Simon on that line with Sidney Crosby, a really speedy player. And, you know, the other night I thought Brian Rust was probably their best forward all around, and he's not a guy that, you know, you expect to provide primary offense. When I watch the Penguins, first off, we got to address the goaltending. I mean, Matt Murray dealt with injuries over the last couple of years, but, you know, Matt Murray has not had a good start to the season.
He wasn't good last year either, really.
Well,
again, injury's a factor, but he wasn't great last year.
You know, the injuries factored in, but, you know, all you have to do is look at his numbers. 3.87 goals against average, 8.86 save percentage. That's in nine games.
Yeah.
I mean, Casey DeSmith has outplayed Matt Murray, and it's hard to believe that's the case this year.
Casey DeSmith going to get the start for the Penguins tonight against the Coyotes.
Well, and you know, the Coyotes are a better team than they were last year, but you know, Matt Murray, if this was last year, he'd be getting that start. Murray was by far getting the majority of the starts when he's healthy. Now he's essentially splitting time with Casey DeSmith, and I think, you know, Mike Sullivan has to be concerned with that. And you know, this Penguins team, I think they'll be all right. I mean, they're going to be a playoff team. I would be shocked if the Penguins fall out of a playoff spot this year, but you know, that defense is suspect. We've seen Olli Maatta scratched earlier this year. He was a healthy scratch. I mean, Olli Maatta was a big part of their defensive group that won the Stanley Cup a couple of years back. And obviously they missed Justin Schultz. Schultz is out of the lineup right now, and Chris Letang has been by far their best defenseman, and he has been for many years. I actually think Jamie Oleksiak is really coming into his own there for the Penguins. Brian Dumoulin, I think, is an underrated defenseman. I think there are signs, Drew, that the Penguins are going to turn this around. You know, I just think this is a bit of a blip on the radar. And I still think they're a top team in the league. And, you know, I mentioned, it's not just Crosby and Malkin. I mean, Jake Gensel, I think, speaking of underrated players, he's a very underrated player. And sure, you know, he's had his struggles early on this season, but a lot of players have been struggling offensively. We talk a lot about it, you know, with the Jets and guys like, you know, Matty Perreault and Nikolai Ehlers were struggling. You know, Matty Perreault still would like to have more goals than he has, and Ehlers is starting to come along now, but you know, I think a guy like Patrick Hornquist, you might want to see more out of him. He's a guy that, you know, I always like to watch, but, you know, he's a guy that you expect more goal scoring out of. But it's the defensive side of the puck. I mean, similar to the Devils. I mean, the Penguins are not known as a top defensive team. I mean, this is a fast, offensive-minded team, but Matt Murray's goaltending, it has to be better. And they have to be playing better in front of him.
The player that's most rumored to be on the trade block, according to the TSN Hockey Insiders and according to Darren Dreger, is Daniel Sprong. If you remember, in his rookie year, actually made the team out of training camp, well, and they sort of screwed around with his development, I think, a little bit.
And, you know, Sprong's on the trading block, Drew, but, I mean, this is a guy that is not factored in.
He's got a four assists in 12 games, so he's not getting a big return.
Well, no, but it's not just the offensive totals. I mean, he's a guy that just hasn't been a steady member of this team. He's been in it. He's been a healthy scratch. He's been down in Wilkes-Barre. If they trade him, I mean, it's similar to Marco Dano. I mean, he's just not a player that they really need.
he's not going to be
I'm
a guy.
I'm not saying that he can't be an NHL player. I don't think trading Daniel Sprong is really going to solve much.
Which is interesting, considering in the AHL level, he was, I think he had 65 points in 65 games last year.
A point a game.
I think he had about 32 goals.
So he's obviously a quality hockey player, but he's also not a guy who...
They've given him a lot of opportunity, Dave, in the NHL. And
oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying, like, from an AHL perspective, and there's guys who are like that, who can be very productive in the AHL and don't necessarily translate that into
And his offensive abilities are well-documented. I mean, this is a guy that put up huge numbers for Charlottetown in the QMJHL. He was a relatively high draft pick. What was he, late first round?
Early second round. Yeah, he was a second round pick.
I mean, this guy has all types of talent, but whenever he's been given the opportunity, you know, he just hasn't done much at the NHL level. So I understand why he's trade bait, Dave.
Yeah.
But he's also I think they got to figure it out defensively. If I'm Jim Rutherford, I'm looking at bringing in a defenseman.
Well, that's where they're missing. Justin Schultz, who, of course, we remember, you know, struggled so much with
Jack
the Oilers.
Jack Johnson has struggled. That's the defenseman I didn't mention. Jack Johnson has not had a good start to the season. I like Jack Johnson. He's a good friend of Sidney Crosby's and all that, but he hasn't looked tip-top.
Well, that was a curious contract when it was signed in the offseason. Nobody really was sure why the Penguins were giving him such a large amount of money and making such a big commitment to him, because he was a healthy scratch with the Columbus Blue Jackets towards the end of last season. They miss Schultz. They miss the puck-carrying offensive ability of Justin Schultz, and they haven't replaced that. They're trying to, you know, replace it with some patchwork players and some guys who are young and you know, coming up from the AHL level. But, you know, that's where I'm looking if the Penguins do end up making a move. And Jim Rutherford is a very aggressive general manager. You always know that he usually will upgrade the team at the trade deadline. You know that he tries to make that upgrade earlier in the season rather than waiting for, you know, the end of February and the NHL's trade deadline.
Drew, the Penguins have enough high-end talent to get them into the playoffs, but the defense, as it's currently constructed, can you get out of the first round even with that defense?
Well, not right now. I mean, right now they just haven't shown enough. I mean, you need to replace Justin Schultz, because he's not out short term. He broke his leg, if I recall correctly,
it's a long term one.
Yeah, it's a long term one for Justin Schultz. And when he comes back, if he comes back this season, who knows what condition he comes back in when you're playing with a leg that's, you know, damaged. It's not easy to bounce back from that one. If you're the Penguins, I'm looking at upgrading the defense way more than I'm looking at anything with your forward group. And Jim Rutherford, as I mentioned, an aggressive general manager, we'll see how long he's willing to let this team sort of work through its struggles before he pulls the trigger and makes a trade with regard to the Pittsburgh Penguin. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Greg Picker. He's the New York Islanders radio analyst. The Islanders are certainly one of the surprise teams so far this season. They're towards the top of the Eastern Conference and they're towards the top of the Metropolitan Division. We talk to Greg about the Islanders up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
To talk about the New York Islanders, one of the surprise teams so far this season, we're pleased to welcome to the program New York Islanders radio analyst Greg Picker. Greg, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, good afternoon. I guess we just hit afternoon here where I am in Sunrise, Florida, but thank you for having me on.
Our pleasure to have you on, Greg. Of course, the Islanders going to be facing off against the Florida Panthers later on tonight. They're doing that Florida trip, having been defeated by the Lightning earlier this week. But so far, the New York Islanders, I think, would have to be considered one of the surprise teams 15 games through this NHL season. 8-5-2, good for second place in the Metropolitan Division. You know, what's the mood around the team? And, you know, given the loss of John Tavares in the offseason, I don't think anybody saw this coming. Certainly we didn't here back in studio in Winnipeg.
You know, we didn't know necessarily how things would go early on in the year. not only just the loss of Tavares, but so much change in the offseason. Obviously, new regime and general manager and president Lou Lamoriello, and then, of course, new head coach Barry Trotz, who brought in pretty much an entire new staff. And you go back a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, the team blew a two-goal lead against these same Florida Panthers that they're facing tonight. That game was at home, lost in overtime after the 2-0 lead evaporated in the third period, and then followed that up with 5 straight wins. So that, obviously, stretch has created a whole lot of optimism and no reason to think that it will go the other direction. The goaltending has been fantastic so far this year. Thomas Greiss has had more than just a bounce-back season so far. Last year's numbers were not nearly where they wanted to be. Right now, a sub-2 goals against average and a .940 save percentage. And Robin Leonard, his obviously off-ice issues were well-documented during training camp, and he's come back just a completely different person, completely different player than what we've seen in Buffalo and in Ottawa previously. So he's also been phenomenal. So it starts, obviously, in net, and when you can have some great goaltending, that'll only help everything else around the entire team. And 5-game winning streak. It was a 7-game point streak that unfortunately came to an end with the shootout loss to the Montreal Canadiens before this 2-game Florida trip started. But a lot of optimism right now. Second place, just 1 point back to the Blue Jackets with the game in hand. And I think if more than anything, the 2-game home-and-home sweep of the Pittsburgh Penguins really showed what this team is capable of.
You know, Greg, sticking with the goaltending there, you mentioned Thomas Greiss and Robin Leonard, and Leonard got the start in that game against the Tampa Bay Lightning, but, you know, you mentioned the numbers, 1.98 goals against and the .940 save percentage for Greiss, and I'm not sure who's going to get the start tonight against the Florida Panthers, but is it possible that Barry Trotz is going to split the goaltending duties between Greiss and Leonard, or do you still think that Leonard's going to play the majority of the games, whether that's, you know, 50 games, 55 games, or whatever?
Right now, it looks like a split. I mean, he said basically at the start of the year, I'm going to go with the hot hand. He actually liked Thomas Greiss's training camp more than Robin Leonard, and that's why Greiss got the opening game start in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Greiss was the best player in that game, basically carried the Isles to a 2-1 overtime victory. He always seems to play well in North Carolina, also carried them to a win a couple weeks ago down in Raleigh. And it's gone back and forth. One guy will get a couple games in a row. He's been hot, and there's nobody's had that real struggle yet where you say, okay, we have to go to the other one. It's been one player has performed remarkably well for a few game stretch, and only when Leonard went out with an injury in Pittsburgh in the first half of that home-and-home, then became Greiss's net for a few games because of that injury. Leonard only didn't dress for one contest, but there was no reason to take the net away from Greiss because he played remarkably well. The team was on that winning streak, so I mean, right now, you wouldn't be surprised if it's a 41-41 split, but we still have basically three quarters and more of the season to go. So if anything changes, then yes, either one of them could still be that 1A guy with the other one being the 1B, but there's no indication of who that's going to be right now because both have been playing so well.
You know, Greg, the talk, of course, all offseason was the loss of John Tavares, but Anders Lee and Josh Bailey seem to be driving the offense for the New York Islanders. Have they really stepped up for Barry Trotz and the team this season?
On the ice and off the ice, Anders Lee, right before game number one, named captain of the team. We know he's an impending unrestricted free agent as well, so hopefully that will be a big part of him signing a long-term deal with the team and being his captain for many years to come. But obviously pressure on their shoulders, without a doubt, the two of them, Bailey and Lee, were the line mates of John Tavares last year and both had career seasons. Anders with a 40-goal campaign, capped it off in game number 82 in Detroit, scoring that 40th goal. And you look at their points this year already. Josh Bailey, more than a point per game, 17 in 15 games. Anders Lee right behind, 13 points in 15 contests. And Matt Barzal, not at a point per game like he was last year, but still putting up some good numbers, 12 assists already in 15 games. So those three obviously being relied upon, but without a doubt, Bailey and Lee, pressure on their shoulders, and they have more than been capable of handling that pressure.
Greg Picker is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Greg is the New York Islanders radio analyst. The Isles, one of the surprise teams so far this season in the NHL. Greg, you mentioned Josh Bailey in the previous answer. I mean, it was a decade ago that he was a former top 10 pick of the Islanders, and he certainly has taken him a long time to find his stride in the NHL. It seemed like he was settling in and around the 40 point total, and then he got a little bit of a boost boost, and everyone said, well, it's just because he's playing with John Tavares. This year, he's over a point a game. Is it time to sort of maybe give Josh Bailey the credit for being a top-line NHL player and not just a guy riding the coattails of a terrific line mate?
He's deserved that credit the last few seasons. I think people who watch his team night in and night out knew that it wasn't as if he was just finishing off plays or making a first pass that Tavares would finish everything else. No, a lot of that was because of the work of Josh Bailey, and not to take away anything from the former captain, but all three members of that line last year were such pivotal reasons for the success offensively. Unfortunately, it was really just too many goals against that led to the downfall of last year's team, but one of the best offenses in the league, and it wasn't at all a one or even a two-man show. I mean, the power play, you look at in 9 goals so far this year, which isn't necessarily where you want to be early on, 20th in the league, but Anders Lee and Josh Bailey have combined for 6 of those 9 goals, so not even just talking about them on being the first liners, still it's special teams. They're performing well. And I think if you ask Islander fans, yeah, they would admit the first few years they were tough on Josh, but the team was patient with him, and it's turned out to be a great job being patient with him because he has turned into a first liner, without a doubt.
Greg, I have to ask you about the Islanders' fourth line. It's one of my favorite lines in the NHL, the grind line, if you will. And I realize Matt Martin is out of the lineup right now with an upper body injury. But, you know, for those who don't know, that fourth line is Cal Clutterbuck, Casey Cizikas, and when Matt Martin's healthy, he's on that fourth line. And obviously, you know, he spent a couple of years with the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I guess two-part question, you know, what has it been like to have Matt Martin back in the fold? He was a very popular, and I imagine still is a very popular member of the New York Islanders. And just how important it is to have that fourth line contributing like they have? Cizikas has 5 goals, and I believe Martin has 3 goals on the year.
Even before the regular season started, the Islanders played 1 preseason game back at Nassau Coliseum, and they were the starters for that game. So they had their names announced, and you could not imagine the applause and how loud that building was. We know Nassau Coliseum can get loud in general, but when Matt Martin's name was announced, the return was so special, obviously on the ice, but off the ice as well, how important he is to Islander fans and Islander players in the dressing room. And every time they're out there, they're, like you said, bringing the energy. Butch Goring, of course, former Islander and now a television color guy, coined them the energy equals MC squared line because, obviously, Martin, Cizikas, and Clutterbuck there. So, and that's just such the perfect name for them because every time they're out there, they bring energy. And like you said, they bring some points. Casey Cizikas had a 2-goal game a few contests ago in that 4-3 shootout loss to Montreal. So it's not just throwing the body around. We know how many years Matt Martin and Cal Clutterbuck both led the NHL in hits. I think something like 6 consecutive years, one of the two of them led the league in hits, but they can contribute offensively as well. And it allows the team to roll 4 lines more than maybe some other teams could.
You know, Greg, one player who seems to be a bit of an enigma is the 2014 first round pick of the Islanders, Josh Hosang. Can't seem to crack the Islanders lineup. He's playing right now with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. Do you think that this is a situation where the team will likely have to trade this asset, or do you think that he'll just maybe have to change a little bit of what he's doing on the ice to be able to have that opportunity to play with New York?
Well, without a doubt, they want him to play a little bit more of a defensive game, not just think of everything in the offensive zone, and that was part of the reason, or really biggest part of the reason, why he didn't last the entire season last year, only about the first quarter of the year before being sent down. But look at the 2014, there were 2 first-rounders, Michael Dal Cole and Josh Hosang, and they've been patient, obviously, with Dal Cole, only 4 games at the NHL level, but has been off to an absolutely torrid pace to start this year with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. If he keeps that up, I believe he's over a point per game. If he keeps that up, first injury, he could be the guy up, or it could be Josh Hosang, one of the two of them. So, you know, I don't think that it's the type of thing where they have to trade him. I think we have seen it, like we talked about with Josh Bailey, a little bit of a different story, but still patience was shown by the front office, and it turned out to be a smart decision, and maybe that's the same thing for both Hosang and Dal Cole.
Last question for you, Greg, and we haven't really asked you about him, which is remarkable because he's coming off of a Calder Trophy winning season last year. That's Matthew Barzal. How has his game changed, if at all, in his second full season in the NHL? I mean, he's certainly, you know, got 13 points in 15 games, which is nothing to sneeze at. But how have you seen him change sort of with a new role and a new dynamic with the Islanders organization?
Well, the one thing Barry Trotz has mentioned multiple times about Barzal, he wants to play a little bit more north-south than east-west. Not the first time you've heard a coach say that, especially about a young player, but Barzal sometimes have a puck on his stick and go for that tour to Barzal all around the offensive zone, hold it for 6, 7, 8 seconds before making a move. Probably haven't seen that quite as much this year because they want him to be more direct, more assertive, getting toward the puck towards the net rather than just carrying it around, whether it's in the neutral zone or in the offensive zone. So that's the thing. I think he's still trying to get a little bit used to that simple north-south game rather than the east-west. And we know how comfortable he is with the puck on his stick. And it's fun to watch when he does get that going. But obviously they do want a little bit more of, to repeat north-south game because those are the words of Barry Trotz that he really wants. And big night for Barzal. This is game number 100 for him. And he's sitting on 98 career points. And so just two away, if he has a two-point game, which he is more than capable of, he'll hit that 100-point mark in 100 games. Only one other player in the last decade has done that, and that's Connor McDavid. So that would be some pretty good company for him.
Greg, I know that Drew said that was the last question for you, but I wanted to ask you about Andrew Ladd. I mean, he was obviously the captain of the Jets for 5 years, and this is his third season with the Islanders, but I think you would agree that, you know, the last couple of years maybe haven't gone, you know, the way Ladd would like them to go, and, you know, he's had a nice start to the season so far for the Islanders. In your opinion, has he finally found that role on the Islanders? He's now playing on that third line, a veteran third line with Filppula and Leo Komarov.
Yeah, you know, I think when he signed, you would hope that he would be a big part of the top six. Last 2 years, you could definitely tell there were some moments where he was dealing with a little bit maybe of an upper body issue. I think back was mentioned, and it kind of hurt his game a bit. But now this year, playing with Filppula and Komarov, FC, two newcomers, and I think they're just the perfect third line. They can chip it offensively, but you know how responsible they are defensively. And they're fun to watch out there. You might not think that with those guys are not necessarily the most, they're not the Barzals out there that you never know what's going to happen when the puck's on their stick, but they're fun to watch and so responsibly defensively. Rarely see them never really see them make any sort of mistakes. And yeah, it's been a great fit for Andrew Ladd to play with those two players in Leo Komarov and Val Filppula, and all three big parts of the penalty kill, which has been a dramatically improved point of this team. It was dead last, 31st in the NHL last year, and really historically bad, but now up above the middle of the pack, 14th, and all three are a big part of that PK unit.
Greg Picker is the New York Islanders radio analyst. Greg, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
No, thank you for having me. Really appreciate coming on here.
Thanks, Greg. We'll do it again real soon. When we come back, it's Hockey Hall of Fame induction weekend, which means it's never too early to look forward to the potential 2019 inductees. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We had a couple of first balloters get in this year, Martin Brodeur, Martin St. Louis. So looking ahead to next year, maybe a couple of teammates of these guys. How about Patrick Elias of the Devils and Vinny LeCavalier of the Bolts right there? We see of these guys and our colleague right here, Alex Tanguay, and Brad Richards on there as well.
From our friends at NHL Network talking about the potential 2019 class for the NHL or the Hockey Hall of Fame. Pardon me, it's not the NHL Hall of Fame. The Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony, of course, is this weekend. It's Hall of Fame weekend, and the induction ceremony goes Tuesday, which you can watch live, I believe, on TSN. Two, couple programming notes, of course, tonight on the station, the Moose in action. Our own Dave Minuk will be providing color alongside our good buddy Mitch Peacock. So that's a 6 o'clock puck drop, Dave?
Yep.
6 o'clock puck drop for the Moose tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. And of course, tomorrow, a big day on the station. You have Blue and Gold Game Day, the Bombers and the Rough Riders in the West Division semi. That gets underway at 12 noon tomorrow, a special extended pregame show leading right into pregame coverage of the Jets and the Devils with a 6 o'clock puck drop, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. So, of course, just keep your radio locked to this fine station. We've got you covered for everything you need to know about Winnipeg sports. The Jets will hit the practice ice at the Iceplex coming up in about 40 minutes time at 12 noon. So, of course, you can catch a Jets practice update later on this afternoon on illegalcurve.com as well. Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony. It's a good class this year.
Yep.
the two Martys you talked about earlier, Marty Brodeur, Marty St. Louis, Gary Bettman, Jada Hefford, and of course, long overdue, the man who broke the color barrier in the NHL, that's Willie O'Ree.
Yep.
And I think it's a little bit of a shame from my perspective that O'Ree is not getting as much publicity as
he should
because, I mean, would have liked to see him even maybe go in on his own in a special class, given all that he has overcome and the great ambassador that he is for the game.
Yep.
But, you know, it's going to be a great weekend, I'm sure, for everybody in Toronto and the induction ceremony upcoming. Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we met him in New York when we were at the draft in New Jersey, and he's such a gentleman, and he's just, you know, it's interesting, actually, because he's just willing to talk to anybody. Like, you could just see it. He was willing to talk to anybody. We were in the hotel, and we just sat and chatted with him for not that long, but it was a nice conversation, and you could just see he was willing to engage folks, and you can just see what a gentleman he is, and that's the word that kind of, you know, comes to mind when you mention his name.
It's going to be a big weekend for these inductees, and it's a good class. Next year's class is looking a little thin when it comes to some of the NHLers who might make it. And, you know, again, this is the Hockey Hall of Fame.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. You see some of the candidates that they're talking about. Is there anybody that...
Vinny LeCavalier.
Yes. This is a shout-out to the women. Haley Wickenheiser is going to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
And she's 100% deserving.
And I've said this many times before.
Yes.
And forget the female versus male. One of the great leaders in hockey history, we remember back to 2002, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
She's won the Olympic gold medal four times. That alone should get her into the Hockey Hall of Fame. But she is, in my opinion, the greatest female hockey player of all time.
And she should be the headliner, if you want to declare a headliner of the class.
Yes, absolutely. Damn right.
It should be her, because the NHLers who are up are certainly, in my perspective, pale in comparison to the accomplishments that Haley Wickenheiser has had for women's hockey and in the international hockey world. I expect that Daniel Alfredsson is going to get in next year.
Well, I have no problem with Alfie getting into the Hockey Hall of Fame. And for me, Patrick Elias is absolutely a Hockey Hall of Famer. Stanley Cups.
Go on.
Three Stanley Cups, 1,025 career points. Look at his playoff numbers, Drew.
He's had good playoff numbers. And
he's almost a point-a-game player in the NHL.
Yeah.
You know, and he was in an era of some fantastic hockey players. He was such a great player for the Devils for so many years. I think he should absolutely be a Hall of Famer. That's just my own opinion, but I'm going to use this opportunity again this year. I'm going to do it every single year as long as we're doing the show. Theron Fleury should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. And if he's not going to go in the Hockey Hall of Fame as a player, he should go in as a builder. You know exactly why he should go in as a builder. You know, the abuse he suffered and what he's done with his motivational speaking. I mean, you guys, I think, agree with me, and I don't think many people are going to disagree with me, but, you know, in an era where small players were few and far between,
mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a guy that absolutely dominated the NHL. He had, you know, 100-point seasons. I think he had 8 30-goal seasons. I mean, even in his last couple of years in the NHL with the New York Rangers, he was over a point-a-game player. So, you know, Theron Fleury, well over 1,000 career points, Stanley Cup, Olympic gold. He should be in the Hall of Fame.
I don't disagree with you at all on Theron Fleury. I'm not going to be as eager to agree with you on the Patrick Elias thing. To me, Theron Fleury is a Hockey Hall of Famer, and he should be in. I mean, we've had this conversation on the show, you know, over the years. I find the Hockey Hall of Fame to be a little bit watered down. And at no point in time, I don't want to take anything away from Patrick Elias. He's had a great career. But at no point in time when I watched Patrick Elias play hockey did I think to myself, this is a Hall of Famer. This is a guy who's going to be, if the Hockey Hall of Fame is for the all-time greats, Patrick Elias's name never came to my mind when thinking about the all-time greats in the world of hockey. Now, you know, reasonable people can disagree, and we both are reasonable people, at least sometimes we are. So that's just one of those where you and I think differ on that. But, you know, I'll certainly listen to arguments in that regard, David.
What about Curtis Joseph? I mean, I realize he never won the Stanley Cup, but he's fourth all-time in wins. Fourth all-time. Of all the goalies that have ever played in the NHL, fourth all-time. I have no problem with Cujo in the Hall of Fame.
I don't have a problem with Cujo. You remember some of the great...
Sorry, fifth all-time.
Whatever it is. If you're top five in wins, you should probably make the Hall of Fame. I'm okay with that.
All those years, Drew, with the Oilers and the Blues.
I mean, you remember
and
some
then the Leafs. I mean, this is one of the best goalies of all time.
And then he went to the Red Wings, I think, for a little while after the Leafs. I mean, you remember that. I mean, it's still etched in my memory, the great run he had with the Oilers when they defeated the Dallas Stars in that huge upset. Was it Todd Marchand coming down the wing in Game 7 and blowing past? I can't remember who the defenseman was for the Stars, but blowing past him and the Oilers, and it was on the backstop of Curtis Joseph and some of his tremendous playing that led them to the success that they had when really nobody gave him a chance. So I'm okay with Cujo going in. We'll part ways on Patrick Elias, Dave.
A couple of long shots, players I like, though. Rob Brindamore, Jeremy Roenick, a couple of guys who have some longevity in their careers, been eligible for a long time, I think 6 and 7 years respectively. Vinny LeCavalier, I think this is his first year of eligibility, perhaps, I think.
It is.
And
I think there's a good chance all these guys are getting in, by the way.
You know what? I understand.
Rod Brindamore? Sure. No problem with him being in the Hall of Fame. Vinny LeCavalier? I mean, he was a dominant offensive player for 10, 12 years with the Lightning.
And I think those three are all somewhat in a comparable stage with obviously with LeCavalier having won the Stanley Cup. Well, obviously Roenick didn't, but so you got that difference.
He scored the big goal in the World Cup in 2004.
Right. Yeah, of course. The one most Canadians will never forgive him for. But the fact is that, I'm one of those people who likes JR. I didn't love necessarily his thing he did with Patrick Laine. It was a little bit awkward, but that video they put out. But I like what JR has done for the game.
McGillney?
I was going to say McGillney.
McGillney's a Hall of Famer.
McGillney to me is a Hall of Famer because of his goal scoring prowess. And, my benchmark, which I've talked about on the show.
He won
before,
the gold medal with the Russians, I think.
It was
the USSR. I don't remember what team it was.
Well, Fedorov, McGillney, and Bure in their heyday, that was one of the best lines in the history of international hockey.
If you get to the point per game plateau, that to me is the minimum threshold for a lot of these Hall of Famers. And McGillney did it in only 990 games. It's amazing. He never played 1,000 games in the NHL. 990. We remember that he tied Solani with 76 goals.
Yeah, that season, that'll go down as the greatest, one of the great, most exciting seasons. Watching those two guys back and forth with that, trying to win that scoring championship was just incredible.
Yeah. So to me, McGillney is in. I'm agreeing on Theron Fleury. I think we're unanimous on Haley Wickenheiser, and we'll fight to the death over Patrick Elias off air. And, whoever's not here next week, who won.
You're not winning a fight with us.
So, no, I got no chance.
I got my money on Ezzy.
Yeah. And they bruise like a peach as well, so I'm really not interested in fighting with them. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Brandon Wheat Kings. Stelio Mathéos is the captain of the Wheat Kings. He had his 100th career Western Hockey League goal last night. We're going to talk to the former third-round pick of the Carolina Hurricanes. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, he's been playing to sold-out crowds all week long, and he's actually recording an album at the shows tonight. Paul Meyerhog in town, two shows, 7:15 and 10 o'clock. Very few tickets available. Get them now before they're gone at rumorscomedyclub.com. Hoping to hear from Stelio Mathéos of the Brandon Wheat Kings. He's supposed to be calling us as soon as he does, or we're going to bring that to you.
Drew, speaking of the big numbers, I love to talk about the big numbers.
Okay.
We were talking about, some potential Hall of Famers next year, Vinny LeCavalier, maybe Patrick Elias. We were talking about Marty Brodeur's win totals. Stelio Mathéos scored his 100th career WHL goal, which is incredible.
Sure.
I mean, most players just don't score that many goals, but he's now up to 17 goals and 31 points in 18 games.
And you're saying that's good?
Well, it's really good.
I know it's really good. I mean,
he's going to be in the NHL very soon.
He is a third-round pick of the Carolina Hurricanes, so another young prospect going through the Hurricane system. Of course, he's finishing his junior career with the Wheat Kings, and you'll see quickly as he makes his way through the Hurricanes roster and his Hurricanes organization.
Well, Charlotte's a good organization, too.
Charlotte Checkers, of course, a good organization in the AHL as well. We're hoping to hear from Stelio. As I mentioned, you know, the Ottawa Senators.
Yep.
They can't get out of their own way. We were going to talk about it at the last segment, but maybe switch things around. They can't get out of their own way. They had the Uber.
Like, are they just a full-time reality show now?
No, they're a full-time tire fire is what they are. So the, in case you missed it, you know, as I'm sure you didn't, you saw the video of the Senators earlier this week trashing the coach, on Uber. And then, you know, we all agreed it was very scummy of the Senators to do, pardon me, of the Uber driver to do that. And you sort of thought the story was done with by Thursday or so.
The players eventually apologize.
Players apologize. You come out. They win that game against the Devils. You think they've maybe put these bad voodoo behind them. And then what do the Senators do? They just can't stay out of their own way. They trip over their own feet at every given opportunity. As the Senators are the only team in the NHL that
the only Canadian team.
Pardon me. The only Canadian team in the NHL that lets media travel on the charter with the team.
Now the media pays to be there.
Right.
They're paying. They're not, it's not a free ride, but they just, it's a convenience.
It's a convenience. So they're at the gate getting ready to fly. Where are the Senators playing?
Tampa. They're going to Tampa.
Okay. The Senators are on their way to Tampa to play the Lightning. They're at the gate. What do? They take Ken Warren of the Ottawa Citizen and the Ottawa Sun, who's covered the team for a number of years, who's an utmost professional. And they say to him just at the gate, just when they're about to board the plane, you're off. You're done. No travel. You're not traveling with the team anymore.
I don't understand. Is Ken Warren Jim Acosta?
Well, the reason why they do it is because the Senators went to the Citizen and the Sun, which are both post-media newspapers, and they said to them, please take down the video of the Senators players bad-mouthing the coach that the Uber driver released.
First of all, it's the internet. You can't take down anything.
Right.
Once it's on the internet, it's on the internet.
It's there forever.
Even if you take it down,
somebody else is going to put it up.
But it happened.
And
Right? Like, it's out there.
Right. So the management at the Citizen, not Ken Warren, they don't go to Ken Warren and ask him this, but the management at the Citizen and the Sun said to the Senators, sorry, this is newsworthy, we're not taking down the video.
Mm-hmm.
So what do the Senators do? They don't call Ken Warren and say, we're revoking your privilege to fly on the team charter, you know, 2 days ahead of time. 5 minutes before he's set to board the plane while he's waiting at the gate is when they boot him off the plane.
Like, think about what you just said. He was literally waiting at the gate.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he was even in an Uber on the way to the airport. Sorry, I couldn't resist. He was actually at the airport.
No,
I feel so bad for him.
It's terribly, it's petty and vindictive, and it's really small of Ottawa to do that to the guy. I mean, the fact is, if you're mad, that's fine. Look, it's your right. You own the entity. You don't have to allow him to fly with your team.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, to allow him to show up at the airport and then not allow him to board the plane is pathetic.
By the way, isn't TSN's Brent Wallace also on the no-fly list?
Brent Wallace is also on the Senators no-fly list because earlier, I believe last year.
No, it was during the when they were at Parliament, playing in front of the Parliament.
Okay.
Last year.
And he had asked
Eugene Melnyk. There was a report that Eugene Melnyk hadn't been able to make payroll in some regard or another. I don't remember 100% what the details are. But Brent Wallace asked Eugene Melnyk about it, and Melnyk denied it. And Brent Wallace was doing his job as a journalist in asking the question. The camera flips off. Melnyk allegedly says to Brent Wallace, I'm going to ruin you.
Bury you.
I'm going to bury you for asking the question that every journalist would ask. And so Brent Wallace was, as a result, kicked off the Senators' charter as well.
Like, is Eugene Melnyk Donald Trump?
He's the Donald Trump, I suppose, of NHL owners. Maybe
all I know is I was in Ottawa last year when the Jets were there.
Yeah,
and there were billboards, and all of the fans I spoke to,
mm-hmm.
they do not like Eugene Melnyk, and in fact, not only do they not like him, they're not buying tickets because of him.
And that's when a organization and its relationship with its fans gets poisonous. When the fan base actively dislikes the ownership and refuses to pay to attend the game because of who owns the product, that is when it's incumbent on the NHL, in my opinion, to step in and force a sale.
You know, though, at the same time, why? I mean, the person who's going to have to change...
How do you force a sale, Drew? I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Well, I mean, there's ways to apply pressure behind the scenes to encourage him to take on a partner or to maybe take a less visible role in the organization. And if nobody sees Eugene Melnyk, that would go a long way to helping the Senators' cause. The problem is, and we talked about this off-air before the show started, guys, is that the Senators do not have a filter between Eugene Melnyk and what's coming out of the organization. For the longest time, Brian Murray was the face of the organization, and he was well-respected, and he was well-regarded, and he knew how to deal with issues that would come up. Now, we all know that Brian Murray tragically passed a couple of years ago, and Pierre Dorion is now the Senators' general manager, and he doesn't have that same gravitas that Brian Murray had. So what happens is Eugene Melnyk, who is a bit of a wild card, sort of fills that void, and there's nobody to filter Eugene Melnyk, and you end up with situations like this where where Ken Warren is booted off the plane right before it's set to take off, where you release that god-awful video in the off-season featuring that interview with Mark Borowiecki.
Between two ferns.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have somebody there to say to Eugene Melnyk, no, don't do that, or don't be the face of the organization right now. There's no leadership there, and that's what's causing such chaos with the Ottawa Senators.
Well, Andrew, it's like, I agree with you 100%, and it's like Michael Tracco says in the article, after this Uber controversy, where was Eugene Melnyk and Pierre Dorion?
Yeah.
They didn't talk to the media after.
Well, never mind that. My favorite part is when the controversy breaks and they have the practice, you know, right afterwards, that's the first opportunity the media has to talk to players. Who comes out is not the players who are involved in the controversy. They sent out, I believe it was Mark Stone and somebody else who had nothing to do with the video to try and defuse the situation. And all that does is it gives it legs for another, you know, half a day or a full day until the media are able to talk to the actual players who, you know, gave the critical comments. It's like the organization has no idea about how to handle, I mean, crisis management is too strong a term, but they just continually pour fire on this situation where it's basically done for. Nobody's talking about the Uber video. You know, there was no plan for us to talk about this Uber video today. We already talked about it on Wednesday's show. But what happens is they pour fire on the situation, and now we spend 15 minutes making fun of the Senators organization for being, you know, poorly run.
And again, that kind of, you know, goes back to the idea of, you know, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. Like, what are you doing with the Ken Warren thing to even reignite the conversation? Why do it? I mean, the whole point is, even if you don't want Ken Warren on the plane,
yeah,
do it in a different manner, do it in a tactful manner. And that's the problem. That there's no class here. Like, that shows absolutely zero class by the Ottawa Senators organization. I don't care what you think about media. I don't care what you think about the Ottawa Senators. The fact of the matter is there's zero class by that organization by doing that to that person. First of all, he wasn't the person who did it. So you're penalizing him for a decision made by his organization, which he isn't, you know, the determiner of that fact. And more importantly, again, there's a way of doing it tactfully and say, listen, Ken, you know, you take him aside, you say, as a result of the decision by your management group, we're not going to have you fly on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell him in advance, you don't let him get to the airport with his bags packed, having to scramble.
It's a joke.
It's vindictive and degrading.
No, and again, but it's classless. There's no class. And again, I get it. This isn't someone that works for the Ottawa Senators.
Sorry, Dave, and you're also, you mentioned it, you're punishing someone, a guy that's covered the Senators for many years.
Right.
He wasn't even the guy that was
responsible for
putting the video up there. So what is that really proving?
There was no byline. So the original article that went up about it when the video became, you know, released to the public, mm-hmm. there was no byline attached to that video.
Right.
To the article,
right.
Which says, as Elliot Friedman mentioned in his column, it says that none of the people who cover the Senators want to be associated with it. They acknowledge that there's a news story here,
mm-hmm.
which there is, because every single person who watches that video says this is newsworthy. But they don't, I mean, it's an awkward situation. Nobody wants to have their name attached to it.
Well, it's salacious, right? So
yeah. You're
sitting there going, and it's funny because everybody was complaining, like even the people on Twitter were like, I can't believe people are putting out this video. And then they were tweeting the video.
Of course.
And I thought to myself, isn't that interesting? You're complaining about a video and how it's terrible, but you're putting it out on Twitter, which is getting it viewed. I thought to myself, if it's so horrible, then don't put it out. Don't tweet. You can tweet about it without tweeting the video.
There's a lot of people exactly. Like, I don't need your opinion about the video. I can find the video on my own, but don't perpetuate it if you think it's so horrible.
Exactly.
Drew, you know what the worst part about this is? The Uber video was bad enough, but, you know, not letting a hockey journalist on a plane. The worst part about this is all of these events just make it harder for the Senators organization and their fans to move on.
Mm-hmm.
You lived in Ottawa. I've got a lot of family in Ottawa. I love the city of Ottawa. I was just there. Not only is it a great city, but they have great hockey fans there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like one thing after another. And, you know, this is a young hockey team. There's a lot of reason for optimism there. Thomas Chabot is one of the best young defensemen in the game.
He's having a fantastic season, and nobody's talking about it.
Fantastic year. Yeah. He's arguably the Calder favorite right now, not just a Calder hopeful.
Yeah.
Brady Tkachuk, before he went down with an injury, Brady Tkachuk was playing some fantastic hockey as an 18-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's Alex Fermentin is another player. I mean, he's going to have a long NHL career. He's a top prospect in their organization. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about if you're an Ottawa Senators fan, but the owner continues to embarrass the team.
It is remarkable what the Senators can't get out of their own way and continue to pour fire on negative stories. Not sure what's happened to Stelio Mateos. That's okay. When we come back, we'll talk one final segment. There's been a couple interesting signings in the NHL this week, and we got a great Ezzy story for you. That's up next. You're listening. Ezzy's saying no. We're up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Lightning forward Yanni Gord. Yanni, congratulations on signing a six-year extension that locks you up with the Lightning through the 2024-25 season. You've worked so hard throughout your career to get this opportunity. Just how does it feel?
It's a great feeling. I mean, there's nothing better than this feeling right now. Obviously, I'm so excited to be for this team for another 6 years.
Every now and then, there's a feel-good story in the NHL. Yanni Gord of the Tampa Bay Lightning certainly counts as one of those. A guy that nobody really expected to make the NHL, undrafted, young player out of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Finally, gets his crack as working through, you know, the ECHL, working through the AHL. He gets into the Lightning lineup and is a revelation for them. And he's rewarded earlier this week with a significant contract extension, 6 years, $31 million, an average annual value of $5.166 million. A real nice story for a young guy in Yanni Gourde, who's over a point a game this season and had 64 points in 82 games played, his first significant action in the NHL last year, Ezzy.
And also from one of the best hometowns ever, Saint-Narcisse de Beverage, Quebec.
Wow. I'm unfamiliar with that place.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that is in Quebec, but it's just a long town name, so I love it. But
you think they have any snakes there?
I knew you were going there, Dave. I was just looking at you saying, okay, how long until Dave makes snake comment?
I saw Drew watching me. I was like, all right.
Okay.
I'm walking right into this one.
Yeah, it's right up right up your wheel alley right there.
No, in all seriousness, though, Drew, I mean, you know, Yanni Gourde was a top rookie in the NHL. Like you mentioned, you know, he's an undrafted player, comes up through the East Coast League, American Hockey League. Dave, I know you love those types of stories. You know, we saw that with Marty St. Louis, obviously, you know, with the Lightning, before that the Flames, but, you know, a well-earned contract. He's also off to a great start this year. He's, I believe it's 17 points in 16 games for the Lightning. He's a big part of their offense right now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, Kucherov and Stamkos, and they've got Braden Point there as their second-line center. But, you know, Yanni Gourde is a key member of their top six there.
Yeah, and, you know, they have so much talent up front for the Lightning that it's going to be hard to see how they're going to be able to ultimately fit everybody in there. But the Tampa Bay Lightning certainly are a dynamic offensive team, and Yanni Gourde is one of those key players for the Lightning going forward. And so it's nice to see him get rewarded after coming really from humble roots to make the Lightning roster.
Now let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Brandon Wheat Kings, he's the captain of the Wheaties. We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Stelio Mateos. Stelio, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Last night, a great accomplishment for you. Your 100th career Western Hockey League goal in a 6-3 victory over the Red Deer Rebels. You know, as a former first overall pick in the Western Hockey League Bantam Draft, getting that 100th career goal, what does that accomplishment mean to you?
You know, it's not really something you think about too much, but one at a time, and you know, felt good to hit that. But you know, credit to my teammates, you know, being set up many times. So,
Stelio, last night was your first game back with the Wheaties. You played for Team WHL in the Canada-Russia series. What was that experience like for you, and how do you feel you played personally?
Yeah, it was a good experience for sure. Knew a lot of the guys there, and you know the new guys I met got along with really well, and just two games, and thought I worked hard. I was actually on my eighth and ninth games on the road, and I enjoyed the experience.
Take us back to the 2017 NHL draft in Chicago when you were selected by the Carolina Hurricanes in the third round. What was that day like for you leading up to the draft and then after your name was called by the Hurricanes?
It was an exciting day. I didn't really have any idea where I was going, to what team, and what round even. And be selected by Carolina was awesome, and I was really excited. And
all good.
Stelio's there.
Just got a call, but it was, exciting, and I wanted to prove them right, and prove other teams wrong for sure.
Stelio Mateos, captain of the Brandon Wheat Kings, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stelio, the Wheaties off to a good start in the year, 9-4-3-2 in your first 18 games. That's good for third place overall in the Eastern Division. You have a couple games in hand on the Saskatoon Blades, who are right in front of you. How would you assess the start to the season for the Wheaties?
Yeah, I think it's been a good start. I think we can definitely build off it. And, we've got a pretty young group right now, so. I think the team's really gelled, and we have great coaching, so definitely something to build off.
Stelio, you just mentioned coaching, and David Anning has been your head coach for the last 3 years. What's your relationship like with Coach Anning, and how has he impacted your career so far?
It's been great. Me, Dave, and Don McGillivray, assistant coach, we all have a good relationship, and I just try to lead the group as best I can, and obviously have an open dialogue with those two coaches, and it's nice kind of having them 3 years in a row, and now we're more comfortable, and it's just kind of gotten better every year, I think.
So as you mentioned, prior to the season, you were named team captain of the Wheaties, and your teammates Connor Gutenberg and Lyndon McCorrister were named alternates. The three of you won the WHL championship together. What's it been like for the three of you guys to be able to spend your careers together and become the leadership group of this team?
Yeah, it's been awesome, definitely Lindy and Goody, being teammates for 4 years, and it's been great. They're both great teammates and great players, and it's fantastic to be able to, play with them for this long.
Stelio Mateos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stelio is the captain of the Brandon Wheat Kings. He was a third-round selection of the Carolina Hurricanes. And Stelio, how often are you in touch with the Hurricanes? How often do you see them around the rink? And maybe, how involved are they in your development now that you're, property, quote-unquote, of the Hurricanes organization?
Yeah, I see them now and then for sure. Sergei Samsonov's their forward development guy. So he was down in Brandon about a month ago. For almost a week, and kind of came, watched me practice, play, and did some video and stuff together, and he's kind of just trying to help me with my game, and they've been great for that development side.
Stelio, you mentioned earlier the Wheat Kings have been on the road now for, I think it's almost 3 weeks, if I'm not mistaken, and obviously, you were playing in the Canada-Russia Super Series, but how nice is it to be just starting this six-game homestand for the Wheaties?
Oh, it's fantastic. It was just a great feeling yesterday, kind of going into our own rink again. We kind of got some touch-ups on our room, so that was pretty awesome. Got the guys excited, and just, getting back into our gym and everything, and, just all the routines we have at home, it was really good. It kind of gave us some energy for sure, I thought.
Stelio Mateos, captain of the Brandon Wheat Kings, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stelio, the Wheat Kings, when you talk about the Wheat Kings, the one of the first names that always comes to mind is Kelly McCrimmon. He, of course, owns the team, and he's also the assistant general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights. How often do you speak with him, or do you not, sort of, given that his role is now primarily with the Knights while he still does own the Wheaties?
Yeah, definitely his role is, primarily with the Knights, and, Kelly keeps in touch, now and then, but he's definitely mostly in kind of the background now. I think that's kind of how he wants to be. And, obviously he's got, a very important role with Vegas. So, we understand that. And, he still does a good job of keeping in touch with us and the coaches and everything.
Stelio, just a couple more questions. I realize that you guys just finished practice about half an hour ago, and I imagine you want to, you know, enjoy the rest of the weekend, even though you guys have another game coming up. But I wanted to ask you about goaltender Yuri Patera. He made 40 saves last night. He's a 20-year-old Czech goaltender. He's a Vegas Golden Knights draft pick, but this is his first WHL season. A little bit rare that you see a 20-year-old from the Czech Republic playing in his first WHL season, but how important has he been for the Wheaties this year? I believe he's already started 14 games for you.
Yeah, he's been unreal. Patty's unreal. He's actually 19, but he battles so hard in the net, and you know he just brings it even in practice. You know, he just never gives up on a play, and he's been huge for us. We have a lot of confidence playing in front of him, and you know, just credit to all his work ethic and everything. He's been a stud for us.
Stelio Mathios is the captain of the Brandon Wheat Kings. Stelio, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Best of luck for the remainder of the year. We'll always keep a close eye on the Wheat Kings and their success in the Western Hockey League.
And congrats on 100 goals.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's an amazing accomplishment.
Congrats on that as well. Take care, Stelio. Thanks so much for joining us. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, as you just heard from Stelio Mathios. We also spoke to Josh Smith of Scouting the Refs. We were joined by Greg Picker, Islanders analyst, Scott Billick, NHL.com, Winnipeg Jets analyst, and Matt Laughlin, New Jersey Devils broadcaster. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on TSN1290.ca, on our website, IllegalCurve.com, and wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to you each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.